Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, April 3rd. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Arcata to consider police oversight as Public Safety Committee disbands. Cal Poly Humboldt professor helps discover new species in Peru, and Ray Hamill with a sports report. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
An Arcata Committee on Public Safety is being dissolved, but police oversight will soon be discussed by the City Council. Daniel Mintz reports.
Arcata's Public Safety Committee is being discontinued, but other ways to address crime and policing issues are available and being planned, possibly including a police oversight committee. At its April 1st meeting, the City Council introduced an ordinance to discontinue the committee. A task force was created in 2016 in the wake of community concern over an attack on a 12-year-old girl near Arcata Elementary School. The task force evolved into the Public Safety Committee, which began meeting in 2019. It was tasked with reviewing public safety issues and needs and making recommendations to council. But Police Chief Chris Ortega said over time, participation in the committee tapered off, and its last meeting was in April of 2023. All 7 membership slots on the committee are now vacant. And Ortega said issues are being addressed through other means.
The work that the committee was originally intended to support is continuing through other established channels. Public safety issues are actively being addressed through regular City Council meetings where the Council receives public input, as well as through ongoing engagement between the police department, community members, the city manager, and city staff. Some examples include the relationships that APD has established and the regular meetings that take place with community stakeholders. Some of those stakeholders include downtown business owners and the Arcata Chamber of Commerce, religious groups, Cal Poly's Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Centro del Pueblo, Arcata House Partnership, and Humboldt County Behavioral Health, as well as any individual resident who wants to address public safety concerns with the Chief of Police. In addition, APD has reinvested in the Arcata Community Outreach Team to enhance alternate response strategies and community engagement, including adding dedicated positions and leadership that's focused on expanding outreach and seeking that public input.
Ortega stressed that, quote, this action is not removing a functioning body. But the need for public feedback on policing and safety issues was emphasized during a public comment period. And Councilmember Sarah Schaefer said the council will soon consider creation of a police oversight committee.
This wasn't a police oversight committee. It truly wasn't when it was functioning at its core of like what true police oversight is. They weren't reviewing cases. They weren't reviewing police conduct. They were mostly just making recommendations on various pet projects in the community or needs that they saw or heard about from the public. But I think we've talked about this at previous goal setting meetings, and we have our goal setting coming up. And so I really think that, you know, if we want to explore the idea of what like true police oversight looks like, or, you know, we've talked about ideas of like having a police chief's council of different, you know, local community groups and community individuals that can provide kind of feedback on policing and process and kind of really get into that community policing element that I think this originally came out of. And so I think, you know, it could be brought about in a more thoughtful way than the current committee that we have. And so I just, you know, think that if that's the direction that we want to go, that's something that can be talked about at goal setting and something that we can work on in a more thoughtful way.
Arcata Mayor Kimberly White said the Public Safety Committee, quote, has not been effective and lacks applicants. She added there are and can be more effective ways.
Moving forward, I think that we can continue to provide clear and focus ways as brought up by Chief Ortega and other council members for the public to bring forward safety concerns. As pointed out by one of our public commenters, city council meetings, the public comment remains a consistent place to raise broader safety concerns. Of course, we have our traffic safety committee for traffic related issues like speeding, crossings, road safety, et cetera. And of course, there is that direct communication with staff, our city manager's office, through the city manager's office or the various individual departments accordingly. And then of course, we have the city reporting tools. You can get online, you can call, you can submit your concerns, you can get follow-up, and we can do periodic community forums.
The council unanimously voted to introduce the ordinance to dissolve the committee, and it will get final approval at a near future meeting. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
An international team of scientists, including a Cal Poly Humboldt professor, has identified a brand new species of semi-aquatic rodents living in the high cloud forests of Peru. The discovery sheds light on how much biodiversity in the Andes remains undocumented. KMUD talked with Cal Poly Humboldt professor Sylvia Pavan, who helped lead the research. Beginning in 2018, a team of Brazilian and Peruvian researchers hiked into Rio Abasao National Park, a World Heritage Site in northern Peru. They were surveying small mammals and hoping to find an undescribed squirrel.
This was a species that we firstly, discovered during an expedition at Rio Abasao National Park in northern Peru. And this was 2018. And then when we collected the specimen, that was just one specimen of this semi-aquatic rodent, we were like starting to compare its genetics with our other, rodents that had been described, including from that group, which is called the ichthyomine rodents. And then we saw that genetically, it was very, very different from everything else.
The animal was tiny, barely the size of a hand, with dense gray-brown fur, a long tail, and partially webbed feet. A year later, the team found another one, this time in the Colan mountain range, also in the eastern Andes.
And then in another field work in 2019, we discovered another specimen in another locality, also in the eastern Andes of Peru, in Colan, Cordillera de Colan. And then morphologically, the new specimen was very similar to the first one collected. And then when we sequenced, the genetic data revealed it was the same species.
Identifying a new species isn't quick. It took years of genetic sequencing, anatomical comparisons, and museum work, including a surprise find.
We started working on the morphological description and comparison of these new species comparing with the other species that already had a name. And we finally came out with the description of that after, visiting several collections and looking at several specimens and comparing them. We were able to formally describe the species. We also discovered another specimen of the same species that was already in a collection, collected like over 50 years ago. So it really shows that, the diversity of small mammals is kind of like unknown, and we need to do both field work and also review museum collections material in order to properly describe it.
The older specimen had been sitting in a museum drawer for decades, unrecognized. And once the team confirmed the animal was new, they still had to figure out where it fit.
When we collected the species in the field, we didn't even know where to put it, like in which genus we would put the species. And then we waited for some other reviews on that tribe of rodents, the ichthyomines, to be published. So after that happened, we were able to compare our ichthyomine with the other ichthyomines already revised, right? And then they recently actually gave a name to the genus. They named the genus Ichthyomis. So the genus names, the name comes from there, from somebody else naming recently. And our species was sister and very closely related to the only species that was known for genus Ichthyomis, which was named last year. Then the name species, Paphiaudis, comes from the very little ear that is kind of like hidden by the fur. So the name comes from that. The Paphiaudis is derived from Latin. Parvus meaning small, and aris is ear. So it's small ear.
The rodent is tiny, about 10 to 12 centimeters long, and known from three localities between 2400 and 2700 meters in northern and central Peru. It also has unusual traits, four pads on its forefeet instead of five, distinctive skull features, and highly specialized fur for moving through water. The discovery also helped launch the career of a young scientist who joined the expedition as an undergraduate.
I got Pamela Sanchez, which was an undergrad student at that time, to join our expedition. She went with us, and then we collected these materials, and she ended up doing her master's degree after that field work with me in Brazil. And then she eventually was, you know, the person studying these new specific rodent and describing. So it's like partially, you know, it was started doing her master's under my advice. So Pamela is the very first author of that. She was leading in forward to compare and to describe this new rodent.
The team also included rodent expert Edson Abreu and Peruvian mammalogist Victor Pacheco. And this rodent is just one of many new species from that same 2018 expedition.
Over half of the small mammals that we collected in that fieldwork are actually not named yet. It's just like showing how much we don't know about the area and how much is still to be discovered.
The team has already published a new mouse opossum from the same region. More species, including a squirrel, another rodent, and another opossum, are still being described.
I'm currently working on like describing a new squirrel from there, and also another new rodent and another new opossum. So there will be more to come just based on that 2018 expedition that we did.
The team's formal description was published in American Museum Novitates this February. It is only the second known species in its genus, and a reminder that even in 2026, the Andes still hold secrets waiting to be discovered. And Ray Hamill with the sports report.
The Big Five schools are scheduled to begin conference play in baseball and softball this weekend, with eight games on tap for Saturday. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the Big Five schedule in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including how the Little Four baseball and softball teams fared in their opening conference games this week, some college softball and baseball updates, some high school golf, how a former HDNL player and coach reached a rare milestone achievement, why it was an impressive week for a pair of local track and field athletes, and who has been named the 2025-26 Humboldt Sports Basketball Players of the Year. But first up, the Big Five schools are gearing up for a big weekend in baseball and softball as they get set to begin conference play on Saturday. Opening day features eight games. In baseball, defending Big Five champion Del Norte opens with a doubleheader against defending North Coast Section champion Arcata in Crescent City. The Warriors are 5-5 after winning two of their three games at last weekend's Hidden Valley tournament, while a young Arcata team is 5-7 after dropping both games in a doubleheader at St. Bernard's last weekend. Also in Big Five baseball on Saturday, Fortuna travels to Eureka for a doubleheader. Fortuna is 2-6, while the Eureka boys are 8-4. The McKinleyville Panthers, who are 7-1, will have an opening weekend bye before beginning their Big Five schedule at home against Fortuna on Wednesday. In Big Five softball, three-time defending conference champion Del Norte opens with a doubleheader against a much-improved Arcata team in Crescent City. The Warriors are 7-3, while Arcata is 6-2. Also in Big Five softball on Saturday, the unbeaten Fortuna girls open with a doubleheader at Eureka. The Huskies carry an 11-0 record into the Big Five, while the Loggers could be the most improved team in league this year and are 3-6. The McKinleyville girls, who improved to 5-2 on the season with a 3-2 non-conference win over Eureka on Tuesday, will have an opening weekend bye before kicking off their conference campaign at home against Fortuna on Wednesday. The Little Four schools, meanwhile, opened conference play earlier this week. On Tuesday, the St. Bernard's boys travelled to Ferndale and came away with a big 8-5 win to end the Wildcats' unbeaten run to start the season. The two schools faced off a second time at St. Bernard's on Thursday, with the Crusaders completing the opening week sweep with an 11-9 win to go to 2-0 in the Little Four and 10-0 overall. With the two losses, the Wildcats dropped to 0-2 in the Little Four and 8-2 overall. Also in Little Four baseball this week, South Fork travelled to play Hoopa on Tuesday and won 7-4. A second game between the two schools scheduled for Thursday was postponed because of the field conditions at South Fork High School. The Little Four softball teams were also in action on Tuesday, opening conference play with a pair of doubleheaders. At Ferndale, the Wildcats started strong and swept their two games against St. Bernard's, winning 13-9 and 8-4 and improving to 8-1 overall, while the SB girls dropped to 3-7. Hoopa and South Fork played two games at Hoopa. The Warriors won game 1 6-3, but the defending conference champion Cubs would bounce back with a 7-0 win in game 2. Hoopa is now 1-1 in conference and 7-5 overall, while South Fork is 1-1 and 5-7. In local college softball, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods hosted a pair of conference doubleheaders last weekend. On Friday, Redwoods played Siskiyous and split, taking game 1 9-8 and losing game 2 8-4. The following day, CR played a doubleheader against Butte and split again, taking the opener 4-1 and losing a low-scoring game 2 2-0. Redwoods is now 2-6 in the Golden Valley Conference and 9-14-1 overall. The Cal Poly Humboldt women were also in action last weekend, splitting a four-game series on the road against the number 3 team in the nation, Cal State East Bay. On Friday, the Jacks lost game 1 9-8, but would respond with a big performance in game 2, winning 9-0. They continued to roll on Saturday, taking game 1 8-2 before losing game 2 11-5. The Jacks are now 6-6 in conference and 15-18 overall. In college baseball, CR played three games against Lassen and lost all three, dropping to 4-26 overall and 2-15 in conference. In local high school boys golf, it's shaping up to be an exciting race for both the individual and team league championships. Through three of the six rounds of action, Arcata's Matisse Stuen and Ryzen Miller are tied for the league lead with just 10 strokes separating the top six golfers in the standings. The league golfers were back in action at Baywood Golf and Country Club on Monday, with Stuen and St. Bernard's Braden Simpson tying for the low score of the day with rounds of 78. Switching gears, it was a good week for a former HGNL player and coach and a Humboldt Crabs Hall of Famer. Al Brizak, who played and coached baseball with St. Bernard's and the Humboldt Crabs in the 1990s, recorded his 500th career win as head coach of Division III Edgewood University in a 14-4 win over Wisconsin Lutheran. Brizak has been in charge of the Eagles since 2000 after spending 4 years as a coach with the Crabs. In local college track and field, it was a good week for a pair of former HDNL standouts at the Cal Poly Humboldt Invitational on Saturday. Former St. Bernard's Crusader Layla Florvillis returned to the North Coast with the Chico State women's team and placed first in the high jump with a jump of 1.57 metres. Former Eureka logger Joseph Gonzalez also impressed for the Lumberjacks, setting a new school record on his way to victory in the men's shot put with a throw of 17.01 meters. It was the second time Gonzalez has broken the Jacks record in the event this season. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, St. Bernard's senior Liam Dyer has been named the Humboldt Sports Boys Basketball Player of the Year after an outstanding winter on the courts for the Little Four champs. Twin sisters Tay and May Wolford of Arcata, who led the Tigers to Big Five and Dick Nicolai tournament championships, have been named the Girls Players of the Year. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
In state news, California makes progress toward goal of 70% college attainment. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Right now, 56% of Californians from ages 25 to 64 have earned a college degree, credential, or certificate, but that's well short of the goal set by Governor Gavin Newsom of 70% college attainment by the year 2030. A new report from the Campaign for College Opportunity lays out a plan to support more students as they pursue their dreams. Jesse Ryan, president of the campaign, says California needs well-educated workers to sustain the economy, which is now the fourth largest in the world.
And we also will not meet that 70% attainment goal if we don't do a better job on delivering better results for our Latinx students, our Black students, our low-income students, and our first-generation students.
The state created the California Education Interagency Council to make sure that leaders from the public school system, community colleges, and four-year colleges create seamless pathways to degrees and certificates that match workforce needs. The Cal State schools are now proactively offering admission to students who qualify without them having to apply. Programs called Associate Degrees for Transfer have funneled 630,000 students into four-year institutions. 6.4 million Californians currently have some college credits, but no degree. Ryan says the state will need 1.3 million additional educated adults to meet its goals.
It's not just about ensuring that tuition is affordable. It's about making sure that we are removing the barriers of the total cost of attendance.
The report also praises dual enrollment programs that allow students in 9th through 12th grades to get college credit while still in high school. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, two American fighter planes are shot down over Iran. Two American warplanes were lost today in the continued Iran conflict. This comes one day after President Donald J. Trump asked Congress to approve a 40% increase in military spending, putting the potential 2027 defense budget at approximately $1.5 trillion. Both planes, an A-10 and an F-15E, were reportedly shot down by the Iranian military, with Iranian military officials confirming the strikes through a statement. Two pilots were rescued. One was the sole A-10 pilot, while the other was a part of a two-man crew on the F-15. Video verified as authentic by the New York Times showed American helicopters and a C-130 airplane flying at low altitude through the southwestern part of Iran, likely searching for the missing pilot. Two of those helicopters were confirmed as being hit by Iranian fire, according to U.S. authorities, and all crew members returned safely to base, with some reported as injured. It is unclear at press time whether the missing pilot is still alive. 2 days ago, the Pentagon had announced a doubling of A-10 planes in the region. The slow-moving, quote, Warthog, as it is colloquially referred to, is designed to assist ground troops at low altitudes, with a large cannon that fires 30mm shells 70 times per second. That downed plane comes 2 days after President Trump, addressing the nation in prime time, had said of Iran's military, quote, their navy is gone, their air force is gone, their missiles are just about used up or beaten, end quote. In National Native News, Jill Freitas reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. Arctic sea ice has been shrinking in recent decades, reaching record lows both in summer and in winter. A new study shows a continuation of this trend. Ice is sticking to Alaska's northern shores for less time than it used to. Researchers say this can have implications for the climate, resource development, and subsistence hunting. The Alaska Desk's Aliona Naiden reports.
Andrew Mahoney is a research professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute. In January, he and his colleague published a study in the Journal of Geophysical Research, Oceans. It focused on the ice that attaches to the shores of Alaska's northern coast, called landfast ice. They found that over nearly three decades, the landfast ice in Alaska's Arctic is forming later, breaking up earlier, and is not reaching as far offshore.
So it's sort of shrinking in time and it's shrinking in space as well.
Mahoney previously looked at the landfast ice in Chukchi and Beaufort Seas in a study published in 2014. At that time, the Chukchi Sea seemed to experience more ice loss, while the Beaufort Sea seemed more stable. This year's study showed that that has changed. Mahoney says that while landfast ice is only a small fraction of the overall ice cover, it is the type of ice most people come in contact with. Indigenous communities have used it for millennia to hunt, like whalers in Utqiagvik in spring.
A large fraction of the community at any one time might actually be out on the landfast ice actively whaling, and the success of that whale hunt is in part related to how accessible and how stable and safe the landfast ice is.
Mahoney added that the oil and gas industry also uses landfast ice to build seasonal ice roads to connect to facilities. In fact, his team's study was funded by the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management with the interest of oil and gas development near shore. When landfast ice breaks up earlier in spring, coastal communities lose a shield protecting them from the open water and waves.
There's a lot of erosion affecting these communities. Most of it happens in the fall, but we could start to see more erosion happening in the springtime if landfast ice keeps breaking up earlier.
The Arctic has been warming four times faster than the rest of the world. The recent landfast ice decline might be related to the overall thinning of Arctic ice due to climate change. But more research is needed to better understand the process behind it. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Knighton.
It was just election day for the 15,000-member White Mountain Apache tribe. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio reports, a new chairman has been named and hopes his administration can help change course.
The tribal radio station first announced official results late Wednesday.
88.1 FM, whatever, 89.9 FM, CBQ.
White River School Board member Orlando Carroll won the seat by 80 ballots. Over 4,200 votes were cast in that race. The chairman-elect celebrated with supporters.
You are the core of the Carroll administration.
Carroll promises stability and a brighter future after the tribe has had two different sitting chairmen within recent weeks. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrasio.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Suzanne Potter, and Jill Freitas. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.